Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Cure Panel Talk Show's first-of-a-kind live on-air myeloma support group meeting. I'm Priya Menon, Scientific Media Editor at Cure Talk, and I extend a hearty welcome to one and all here from the Cure Talk team of me, Chintan Patel, and Shahid Khan. We will be moderating the call and bringing people live on the show. The Cure Panel Talk Show is organized by Cure Talk, the blog of TrialX.com, an online platform to connect patients to clinical trials of new treatments. For information on clinical trials for all conditions, please visit TrialX.com/ask. For information on myeloma clinical trials, please visit the MMRF trial site, myelomatrials.org or myeloma.trialx.com/ask. A live on-air myeloma support group meeting is a new initiative by the Cure Panel Talk Show, and noted myeloma author, blogger, and survivor Pat Killingsworth spearheaded this new venture. The show is open for myeloma survivors and family all over the world. You can listen to it on Blog Talk Radio, dial in and participate and talk to our support group meeting leaders. Before I hand over to Pat, I would like to read some rules. If you're listening into the panel through your phone as well as computer, please mute to stop the online broadcast on your computer for better audio quality. Participants who would like to speak and share their stories with the leaders may press 1 on their keypads and we will bring them online live. I'm going to hand it over to Pat Killingsworth, our co-host for the show. Pat, you're live on air.
Hello, Priya.
Hi, Pat.
Hi, Sandy.
How are
Hi,
you?
Sue. We're excited about tonight's event. I call it an event because I'm concerned that there are so many of you that aren't able to discuss your situation with other patients because maybe you live in a rural area and or you can't physically get to a support group meeting. They're just so valuable. And as a matter of fact, Gary Peterson, who helped promote tonight's event, and hosts our Myeloma Cure Panel broadcasts every month. He has statistics saying that a patient that attends a support group lives more than twice as long as the average patient that doesn't. And I don't know if this counts or not, but it's worth a try. So I really appreciate Priya's help getting going tonight. And I guess I'm interested in hearing from Sandy and Sue. So, I know all about me. Maybe we'll get back to that. But Sandy, welcome, and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hey, Pat. I was diagnosed with multiple myeloma in 2009, out of the clear blue, really. I had a bad backache and a bad leg. My doctor, who knew I was already anemic, started running some tests, and sure enough, there was an M spike. So we started on that journey of looking for specialists and then moved on to a stem cell transplant. It was successful, but it did not put me into remission but for 4 months. So basically, I've been mostly on chemotherapy since then, various forms, and at one meeting I went to up in by the IMF, I talked to a person who was over all the support groups, and I thought, my goodness, we don't have a support group in our area in Charlotte, North Carolina. So David and I decided, well, we could probably start one, which we did with the help of them, and it was very successful from the get-go, about 30 people the first time, and we've got 90 on a roster, but we sure don't see but about 25 or 30 every month. But we have interesting speakers. We've even had the stem cell specialist that did my stem cell transplant. And we always have food. That's a draw. And then we let people share their stories or their caregivers share their stories. And it has been at least as helpful, maybe more so for me and David, as for everybody that comes. But I know everybody walks away from the support group knowing something they didn't know when they walked in. So basically that's my story, and I'm getting ready to go on some big chemo. That would be Pomalyst, Biaxin, and Dex. So wish me a good flight.
Well, thank you. Welcome. And I met Sandy when I flew up to speak to their group, and they have just a an awesome group in a very idyllic setting, big, tall windows, two or three stories high, and a beautiful church atrium there. And it's just really a wonderful setting and such a friendly, warm group that you have there, Sandy. And so that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to try to find all of us, all three of us have founded or co-founded groups, and I just thought it would be nice if people calling in at least talk to somebody that might have heard their question before. So, Sue, I met you when I flew up to the Grand Rapids, Michigan, to speak to the Grand Rapids, Michigan group, and what a wonderful time. Just some of the greatest people. So I thought, and Sue does a wonderful job, very organized. So I thought I thought you'd be a perfect addition for the group. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, Sue?
Okay. I am married to Harold, who is the patient, and he was diagnosed in March of 2010. And his, too, was kind of out of the blue. But he had a stem cell transplant in September of 2010, so that's been about 2.5 years now, and he's been in stringent CR ever since, so he's been pretty lucky. Although he's had some problems with the chemo and the effect it's had on his blood counts. He's had trouble with Revlimid, really suppresses his blood counts, and they don't want to come back, but he's doing well. Of course, tired, as a lot of people are who are on chemo, doesn't have the energy level he did, but we started our support group almost 2 years ago now, and we actually went, I have to say the International Myeloma Foundation does a great job with the workshops that they have. If you ever have an opportunity to go to those, they're so helpful. And we went to one in Florida in February 2 years ago and ended up meeting a couple that lives like 7 miles away from us. And they said, have you ever thought about starting a support group? And so we kind of decided then that we could, between the four of us, we could do it. And so we started here almost 2 years ago in Michigan. And it's just met a real need here. There were three groups that met on the east side of the state, more in the Detroit area, but there were none on the west side of the state. So we have, we probably average 35 to 40 people have been coming each month to our group. And I just, support groups are so helpful, but I know that some people are in locations where it just isn't really logistically possible for them to come on a regular basis to a group. So I think this is a great idea. And the groups are helpful. I think some people are a little afraid that a support group is going to be more of a touchy-feely kind of thing, and they're not comfortable with that. But I feel like people learn so much in the group. There's just doctors are busy, and so they don't always have a chance to ask their doctor all the questions about side effects they're dealing with or how to handle those. And when people come to the support group, you can kind of compare notes with each other and find out what's worked for other people. And so when you talk about people living longer that attend support groups, I think part of it's because of the medical information that you get by going to the group. It's not, just the emotional support. It's medical support as well. So support groups are a great thing if you have one in the area that you can go to. But this is a good substitute if you can't get to one.
Wonderful. Thank you. And, I throw around these superlatives, but I mean them. Some of the great, maybe it's the bond, but some of the greatest people I think I've ever met are involved with these support groups. And it's a lot of work. And so as a patient myself, thank you, Sue. Thank you, Sandy.
Sure.
For all you do. And
sure.
I wanted to focus tonight on, well, first of all, I wanted the focus to be on people calling in. Because when we have these care panel discussions, we've had some wonderful guests. Dr. Orlowski or someone like that. And, of course, they have a lot to say, and that's why you have them on. You want to hear about that. And then you've got three very inquisitive panelists that pepper the guests with questions, and before you know it, it's 10 to 7 and time to go, and so maybe you sneak in or squeeze in one or two questions, and I didn't want this to be like that, but I did want us to have a little bit of a focus tonight, and I think that focus should be the balance between patient and caregiver, and the reason I selected that is I had a hip replacement, a little less than hip replacement surgery a little less than 2 weeks ago, and I'm doing phenomenally well. I've got to tell you, when Sandy said, you know, I got to brace myself for a new round of chemo, and it's scary. You're starting a new drug or drugs, and you know, we convince ourselves, oh, it's not that bad, it's okay. The Dex, well, it's okay, yeah, the Velcade, yeah, the Revlimid, whatever. I've got to tell you, I felt better on my second day, late in the afternoon in the hospital, than I normally do walking around the day after I have, you know, an infusion. You know, even if it's just a sub-Q Velcade shot. And so I think you get pretty tough. You got multiple myeloma, you got to be pretty tough. And I thought the actual procedure, even though it's major surgery, was really no big deal. I drove to my chemo infusion right back in the saddle again this evening.
Wow.
But my wife, Patty, she's had some health issues too. I think some of it's related to the stress of having to worry about and help care for me, to be perfectly honest. But her back goes out, just like in the movies, where she can barely move. And so, of course, and that happens maybe 2-3 times a year. And, of course, that happened right when I was getting back from the hospital. And so I had no choice but to you know, get going right away. I was actually taking care of her for a few days. And it just got me thinking, you know, as caregivers do so much, and I think we take them for granted sometimes. And it's difficult. The balance is difficult. So I'm hoping we get some caregivers calling in tonight, and that's why I felt it was important that Sue be on the call. And I just would like to hear about some of your experiences. Now her back's starting to feel better. I'm doing okay, so of course it all just sort of goes away, but I'm not going to let it go away this time. We're going to come up with some contingency plans if something like this happens again. And so hopefully my experience can help some of you think about what you might have to do if something goes wrong. So Priya, can you bring some callers in?
Yeah, sure, Pat. Our callers who would like to share your stories with our support group meeting leaders, please press 1 on your keypad and we'll be able to bring you live on air. Participants who would like to share their stories can press 1 on their keypads. Pat, I think people are listening to you talk. Maybe.
Yeah.
Can you hear me? This is Sandy.
Yeah.
I hear
Sandy,
you.
Please go ahead.
Well, what I was going to say is, while we're waiting for a caller, is if someone is in a location without a support group or can't get to one, the IMF's listserv is very easy to maneuver through. You've got to determine, though, ahead of time, you know, what you're going to believe and what you're not. You've never seen these people. But it is patient to patient. So you can ask a question about a specific drug or treatment, and someone will answer your question, and you can find that under the myeloma.org and look under support. So, I mean, that's an option also.
This is like one of those talk radio shows where people call in and nobody shows up.
How many do we have on the line?
No. We have almost 10 callers on the line, so they're listening to you. But people who have called in who would like to speak can press 1. That will help us identify you and bring you live on air. Pat, how are you doing now? We'll just wait for the callers to come and to speak to you. Maybe you could tell us something about you had a chemo today.
I just didn't want to be talking over someone.
No, as soon as somebody wants to talk, I'll know it, so I'll bring them live. No issues.
Great. Well, Sue,
yeah.
Being a caregiver, what does it feel like? I mean, share with us.
Well, one thing I was going to say is with some of the things you've talked about, I think it's really important that caregivers do take some time for themselves, and sometimes that's a hard thing to do. But, you know, it's kind of like the thing we always talk about in the, you know, the instructions they give you in the airplane. If, you know, if you lose pressure, you're supposed to take care of yourself first before you take care of any children. And it's kind of the same thing as a caregiver. You know, you can't really be there to take care of your loved one if you are not doing well yourself. And so it's hard sometimes to get away, but I think it really is important for the caregiver also to, you know, even if it's just go for a walk or meet a friend for lunch, but sometimes you just, you know, and I'm in a situation now where it's not as intense because Harold is doing pretty well, but, you know, during the whole initial chemo and the stem cell transplant and all of that, it's just all consuming. And you just, I think it's really important that the caregiver take care of themselves as well as the patient. And it sounds like Patty's gone above and beyond and taking care of you. And, you know, you can't totally get away from it. I mean, the stress is going to be there and it doesn't go away, but you still got to take a little break sometimes. I think that's important.
We have a caller. Caller from 904992. Please share your story with us. Caller from 904992.
Hi, Priya. This is
You're
Gary.
You're live on air. Yeah. Hi,
yeah,
Gary. How are you?
Hi, how are you? Yeah. How are you doing, Pat?
Good, Gary. Nice to hear from you.
Hey,
yeah.
Pat. This is Andy.
I ended up being a caregiver myself, and I think one of the points that you made earlier is really, really important. And that is, it seems like once you're a multiple myeloma patient, you really get a crust over, you know, they tell you, you got 4 years to live, you know, you're going through all this chemotherapy, you get a stem cell transplant, you're going through all this stuff, and you just, you know, learn to toughen up. And you forget, and so you're this tough person, but then it turns around on you, and like my wife ended up with breast cancer, and all of a sudden I'm the caregiver to her, and you know, as tough as I thought I was, you know, just knowing that there's nothing, you know, I mean, we can do all the things that we can do to support them and that kind of stuff, but you have no control now over their health, you know. You try to support it as best you can. And I got to tell you, I was at a support group meeting and talking about her, and I just broke up. You know, because it was just tough. It was tough being a caregiver. It was easier being the patient.
That is true. Patients, I always say, can take a pill and go to sleep. It's the caregiver who's awake 24/7.
Worrying and...
How's your wife doing, Gary?
She, you know, she's gone through a lumpectomy. She's had, you know, the rounds of radiation therapy, and now she's on tamoxifen. And, you know, remember, we have our Dex days, right?
Mm-hmm.
So she has her tamoxifen days, you know, same kind of response, if you know what I mean. So you got to walk on eggshells every once in a while. It's just the way it is. Just, you know, now I can really, you know, feel sorry for the caregiver who has to deal with us on Dex days, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, listening to you describe that makes me think, and that's one of the toughest things, I think, about being a myeloma patient. You get all geared up. Everybody, you know, people are flying in from all over the country to see you, and you're getting a stem cell transplant, and you know, maybe you're bad off. Not everybody, but some of us were, you know, in pretty rough shape to start. And it's sort of like being, I'm guessing, like being in the armed forces. And you go over to a theater of duty, and you know, everything's focused, and you're all revved up, And then you come home and you're plopped back into the normal world. And I think that's what happens to us. You go through all of that, and then thank God something works and you start to improve and your life begins to get back to normal. And then in a year or two or 3 years or whatever it is, here comes the crisis again. And so you're going from quiet period to crisis period. And I think it's difficult on a family. I think it's difficult on both people. And, of course, my wife is working, and she has a very stressful job. She's an administrative assistant at a dialysis clinic. I mean, they lose patients. She'll be friends with somebody for a year or 2 years, and then one day they don't come in, and she finds out they've passed on, and nobody gets paid enough, and everybody's bitching, and you know it's just, and then she's stuck with me. You know, it's hard. I think it's actually taking a physical toll on her.
It does. It really does. I feel that I had more stress on me when she had cancer, which was, you know, not in a bad stage, but, you know, then when I, you know, when I was going through it.
Sure.
You know, and it's, and it's tough to think of that because, you know, hers was probably, you know, going to be 85% curable, and ours, I don't think anybody's coming close to making that kind of a statement.
Right. Yeah, hurry up and wait.
People have logged in. Yes, Tabik, the caller number is increasing. Maybe I'll just tell them once again. People who want to share the stories, please press 1 on your keypads, and we can bring you live on air.
I was just wondering, Pat, if you, for yourself and Sue, for your husband, if y'all have experienced these unscheduled, uncalled for emotional where you just kind of like aren't yourself, you're not even on decks, and you just are angry and it just comes through. Have y'all had that happen?
Sure.
We have a caller. We have a caller.
Okay.
A person calling in from 269-664. Please share your story with us.
Hello there.
269. Yeah.
Hi.
Hi. This is Connie from the Grand Rapids group. Hi, Sue. And I've met
Hi,
Pat.
Connie.
Hi there. I just wanted to make a comment that my husband, I'm the patient. He's been able to take care of the insurance. We divided that up, and that has been absolutely huge, as you all know.
How'd you do it?
Well, we didn't divide up the, he just takes care of all the insurance and decided he didn't want me worrying about all of that because I had to worry about taking care of myself and getting on a schedule and following through with my treatment plan. So the other advantage is his job allows him to have a flexible schedule as long as he gets his 40 hours in, and that is really unbelievable at times. It's really, I'm just so blessed to be able to have him be able to do that.
Mm-hmm, that's great.
So I worry about, he's a very quiet person, and so sometimes I have to make, a annual physical appointment for him, or, you know, when I'm worried and he's just kind of quiet and, you know, going along. So we're still working on that because things are going along well now. Like you said, Pat, it's hills, valleys, plateaus, and you might get something going for a while that works well, and then you're slammed, you know, with a test result or, you know, something else that causes you to kind of regroup and, you know, try to, where do we go from here kind of thing.
Yeah, so it's a roller coaster ride, isn't it?
It certainly is. And sometimes the roller coaster slows down, yeah. And it goes up another hill. Yeah.
But, I thought you had a good point, because if there are people whose companies don't even know if their companies might offer a flexible time until they ask, if they get in a situation, a caregiver. So I think that's important for people to ask that question if they need it.
That's true. And maybe even for a short period of time if their company isn't thrilled about, you know, but maybe for a month or a couple of weeks to get through some of the difficult, you know, situations.
Well, Connie, one thing I do too, and it's a good point you make that Sven helps you with taking care of all the insurance, and I do that also for Harold, but one thing I've started from the beginning is I take a notebook with me. I've got the same notebook from the beginning, and I take notes at every single appointment we go to, and I keep, you know, every one of his test results I keep in a notebook, and I keep all that organized, and I just feel like he's got enough to deal with the disease. So if I can help him with some of those details, then he doesn't have to worry about it. And, you know, when you see the doctor, sometimes you're a little nervous about what's going on. And so I try to write it all down and make sure. And, I mean, there's, especially when you go back and forth between a specialist and your regular oncologist, and then we've switched oncologists a couple times, and they don't always have, you know, it gets to be such a big file that they ask me, you know, when's the last time you had this done? Or, you know, so it just helps if you keep all that information. And I just find, yeah, then Harold doesn't have to worry about all that. I can, it's something I can feel like I'm doing, but it's useful information too. So, yeah, I just feel like as the care, you know, I'm in a position where I'm healthy, where Pat, you've got, I mean, you definitely have some issues with Patty being ill as well. But I try to do as much of that background stuff as I can to make Harold's life as easy as I can. So that's just kind of, I don't know, that's the roles, I guess, that we've kind of fallen into that have worked for us.
There's two, I would make two other points when you mentioned he takes the notes, but then we've also found it really helpful if somebody has a smartphone just to ask the doctor when he comes in for the consult or whatever that we can record, and most of them are just, don't even hesitate, and we can just record it and then both discuss it later. And also, we use, it's called Numbers. It's a web application.
Yeah,
the spreadsheet. And the doctors get really excited about wanting a copy of that, where for the last 3 years I've put all my labs in for, for every month. So it helps you, you know, kind of graph it out if you get that excited about it. But
yeah,
it helps us just hand it to them and or run a copy for them when we before we get there, or they can just look at it with the iPad or whatever. So that's been helpful just to, we found out, of course, doctors, it's all about numbers. And so they, you know, they get excited when the patient is actually keeping a, you know, a profile of the numbers as they go along.
Yeah, I found the doctors are very appreciative that I do it. You know, they, I don't think anybody feels threatened by it or anything. They're all very grateful that I have it. So it is important, I think, to keep a record of, you know, how it's changed over the years and what's normal for you. And I've kept a log too of all of his medication, you know, ever since he's been on chemo, all the dates that he's taken it, and so you can look at any 1 year and see, you know, when he last took it and how many times he took it and how many milligrams. And it just, I think it's helpful to keep all those records. I mean, you have to be your own advocate. And I have found when you go to different doctors, between the specialist and the regular doctor, their computers don't seem to talk to each other. So if you had blood tests run at one place, they don't have, even though somebody might have faxed them a copy, they don't have it electronically in the system. And so they rely on you instead of, you know, rather than trying to dig through a file and find it, they rely on your records.
I agree.
Well, it's so nice of you to call in, and that's really helpful. Thank you. And I wanted to remind everybody, you know, this isn't a perfect, this probably isn't the perfect technology or format for this, there are going to be some long pauses. Maybe that makes me a bad host, but I don't like to just jump in and talk over everybody. But I think, so what? You know, it's sort of like being at a real meeting. They don't always go exactly like you think, and one person might go on and on a little more than you'd like, and somebody else, you can't pry the information out of them. So, you know, here we have a third thing to deal with, and that's the technology. We should probably see if Priya has somebody else. In the meantime, or if she doesn't, I'd like to talk with Sandy about her. Sandy emailed me earlier today, and you sounded a little apprehensive about starting on pomalidomide.
Mm-hmm.
Pomalyst, and I think I could probably help with that. But let's see. Priya, is there somebody else that would like to join in?
Not as of now, Pat. Maybe
okay.
You can continue your talk with Sandy. Yeah, I'll let
Great.
You know. Yeah.
Yeah, Pat, I would love some help. I've read everything I can get my hands on about Pomalyst. And today was the first time that they told me they're going to add Biaxin to it, and then that's between my doctor and my specialist, and then 10 milligrams of Dex once a week. I haven't been on Dex in years because I have diabetes also. But in my entire clinic of four locations, there's not one person yet on Pomalyst. So, of course, that gives me apprehension.
Sure. Well, I think, I'm excited for you. I think it's great. Now, did Revlimid work for you?
Revlimid didn't work very good for me and caused me such a full body rash that they won't put me back on that. So the drug that's worked best for me was Velcade with other agents like Cytoxan or Doxil or some of those things. But then all of a sudden, the myeloma got aggressive and said, hey, you know, nothing else is going to hold me down. Let's try a new one.
Sure, sure. Well, and maybe when you say Revlimid didn't work well for you, maybe you didn't stay on it long enough because of the rash? Is that part
That's
of
possible.
The...
That's possible. Mm-hmm.
Okay, because all pomalidomide is just an analog of lenalidomide, which is Revlimid. So it's just a little tweaking of the molecules. And they're both IMIDs, immunomodulate or something.
Yeah,
they're in the same class of drug. And I wouldn't hesitate. I mean, the people I know, and I know people that have been, you know, I know Don Wright very well. You know, the Minnesota Don, the marathoner that ran a marathon in all 50 states. And he's been
mm-hmm.
on it for over 4 years.
And he has a good quality of life.
Basically, a stronger form of Revlimid. But it doesn't seem to cause the rashes and some of the other side effects. And then Biaxin is just basically a strong an antibiotic that, for some reason, like dexamethasone, seems to enhance the way some of these drugs work. So you're just trying to get pomalidomide to work the best that it can, and so by adding these two other agents, your doctors are hoping that they can boost the results. And it's that simple, and everybody's sort of guessing. Did Kyprolis come up?
It did, but both of them seem to really lean towards the results of pomalidomide as opposed to Kyprolis. I have so many other health issues. And gastric issues, and I had colon cancer last year. They just seemed like they thought this was going to be the best for me and the quickest to get
really?
It under control.
And I'm not implying that, you know, you said Velcade worked well. Kyprolis is in the same class of drugs as Velcade.
Yep.
So but it would be great to switch it up, and it sounds like you haven't really used IMIDs very much. So with any luck at all, this should be successful. I'm excited for you. I would have no reservation whatsoever.
Well, that helps me. Thank you. I really trust you, so I really appreciate your helping me.
Sure. Hopefully you won't get the rash like you did with the Revlimid.
Okay. Yeah, maybe the Biaxin will help that too.
Oh, that's true. I never thought about that. This would be good. See, I thought we can know a lot about this stuff, but we're not, you know, I'm not a physician, so...
I don't learn something new every day. I feel like I must have slept through it.
Sure. Sue, how's Harold doing? You said he's in stringent
pretty
CR,
well.
Or his numbers still, some of his numbers still down?
Well, we actually were in Chicago yesterday to see his specialist, and of course it takes a few days to get the SPEP back. So we're always, you know how that is, you're just kind of waiting for the results on that, holding your breath and hoping for good news. So we don't know for sure. He's, as of his last blood test 3 months ago, he still was. They would like to do another bone marrow biopsy, just with some of the issues that he's had with blood counts. They think it's from the Revlimid, but they are kind of monitoring to make sure that there's no MDS present. So that's always a little bit of an issue. So, yeah, well, as far as we know, he's okay. We're just, you know how that is. You kind of live from blood test to blood test.
And how about his platelets? And
well, platelets are, I was disappointed they haven't come up more, but they're 86, which he's had been seeing in the 30s and 40s, so we're happy they're up in the 80s, but that's still a long ways from normal. So it doesn't seem to affect him, I mean, other than he bruises a little bit easier. But, yeah, there's not been, it's not really come back up. So I don't think Revlimid is an option for him if and when the he relapses. So that's a bit of a concern. And for him, pomalidomide, my understanding is that it still has that same side effect of the lowering blood counts. So I think that will not be an option for him in the future. So that's a bit of a concern.
Sure. Or maybe he'll get stronger. Maybe he'll get stronger with time. I'm slowly now getting stronger.
Are you?
After almost 2 years, my counts have come up. Well, getting off of Revlimid was like a miracle for my counts. You know, I've been on and off Revlimid, pretty much on Revlimid for almost 6 years, and now finally I'm off, and so everything, including my platelets, are improving.
Well, that's good. What are you on right now?
Velcade.
What are you
Velcade
taking?
Index.
Just Velcade.
I mean, I just
index.
Sort of
okay.
Never got to Velcade, even though Velcade was, you know, mm-hmm. is supposed to be it's the only FDA-approved, you know, drug for a newly diagnosed patient. Revlimid was the hot thing, and we convinced our insurance company at the time in 2007 it was a good idea. Mayo Clinic helped, and I went right to Revlimid. And so I'm just ecstatic to know that Velcade and Dex alone seem to be keeping things under control.
Good.
Because that I just thought that bode well for trying like Kyprolis later, or Millennium's coming out with this, you know, has this MLN-9708, this oral proteasome
yeah.
inhibitor. And actually, Onyx, that makes Kyprolis, is coming out with one too. And so to have that class of drug work was really cool. And the fact that I've gone this long and never used it, I think was, I'm much more optimistic about my future than I was a year ago when I thought, Velcade wasn't really an option. You know, I was not running out of options, but it was going to be a little tougher. So
now
that's why I got my
hip
replaced. I thought, hey, let's stay active. Let's look at the future.
Yeah. Have you had side effects from the Velcade? Or have you tolerated it pretty well?
You know, it hits me like tonight I won't feel good. And it does. There is a little bit of neuropathy at the end of the four. I have neuropathy anyway. Revlimid caused neuropathy and my myeloma, and I have pretty serious peripheral neuropathy. But the Velcade, by the fourth week, I'll start feeling it. But before they came out with sub Q, let me tell you, I'd get that IV and I had full body neuropathy. My whole body tingled. I could tell it was going to be a real problem. My muscles would get stiff. The end of the fourth cycle, I go four on and two off once a week with the Velcade sub-Q. And by the fourth week, I have trouble walking. My legs are so stiff, which is probably just another way that neuropathy is presenting itself. So that was a wonderful thing for me. And you know, some patients it doesn't help. Some it's what a darn God, who came up with this, right? We'd be stuck. Every patient's different. Every patient reacts differently. We must drive our doctors nuts.
Yeah, it is. It's a crazy disease. It needs attention.
Yeah. It is a very complicated disease.
So, Priya, I guess we didn't do a good enough job. That's on me, promoting this thing, but I don't want to give up. You sure there's nobody there that like to talk?
I can see a lot of people have called in, but I don't think they're just listening and still talking, and you people talking. Anyway, okay. I'll ask them once again, yeah? People who would like to share their stories, please press 1 on your keypads, and we can bring you live on air.
Priya, how do you know, because
yeah.
you just put us right through, how do you know when you say number and you give a number, how does the caller know that that's their number?
Pat, I have the dashboard in front of me. I can see the people calling in, their telephone numbers. And
so that's part
number.
Of their telephone number is the number that you're giving.
Yes.
Oh,
I can
okay.
unmute you. Yeah, I'm logged into the Blog Talk Radio site.
Gotcha. Because I think that can be confusing, too. So you're just saying, so somebody just has to think about that it's part of their phone number. Okay.
Yes. But the numbers that I'm familiar with, I put in your names. So I know who's who.
Well, next time we might want to consider doing it the other way with the questions in advance so we know that people are listening.
Yes.
That's a
very good suggestion. Yeah, we could take in questions and get them and answer them, and then people who want to talk to us can anywhere in dial in. So I think that would be a good idea.
We live and we learn.
Right.
Well, and you know, my concern is these people start calling and they'll go off on their own medical stuff, which, of course, you know, a few minutes of background, but they... You know how it is, fellow support group leaders.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
They might go on, and you're so centered on your own stuff, and then they start asking medical questions. Not that between the three of us we can't certainly address some of those. And so I never thought about what we'd do if we had to fill some dead time. But
have you noticed that we haven't stopped
so
talking? So we obviously are very capable. But I'd rather have questions from people who have a burning question.
That's right. Well, Pat, how are you doing with your hip recovery, your hip replacement?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm concentrating, trying not to limp. So it's been 10 days, and Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, it's been 10 days, and I'm basically walking without a limp and without a cane and without a walker.
Wow, that's awesome.
And you're saying less pain than what you had before the surgery?
Well,
can you tell
the
difference?
My butt's sore.
What'd you say was sore?
That's a different type of pain. I would say I'm encouraged that some of my, you know, I couldn't decide which one to go with. The kyphoplasty where they would try to support my back, or the hip. And the hips seemed to be getting worse, and I couldn't walk more than a half a mile. I would literally have to stop, and even at Target, by the end of a shopping, I would be in a lot of pain. And I just thought, let's try that. It's probably the safest thing. And, you know, I think some of my back pain was radiating out from my hip.
Mm-hmm.
And getting that fixed, I'm hoping to. I've used some oxycodone since I was diagnosed. I probably had myeloma for 3, 4, 5 years before they even figured it out. And there were something like 28 measurable lesions. I had holes in my bones when I was when they finally found it. And why would that be hard to find?
Yeah.
What's so hard about finding
28
freaking holes in your bones, right?
A blind radiologist,
just didn't show it very well.
Mm.
So when I finally got an MRI, it looked like my bones looked like Swiss cheese. And so I've been having some side effects from that ever since. But I'm hoping that they can cut down on the oxycodone a little bit. And of course, when you're on Revlimid, and I had a pulmonary embolism, which is one of the serious potential side effects with an IMID.
Right.
That's why.
Right.
You're just going to be on a baby aspirin. What do they have?
I'm going on a 325 regular aspirin.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, and I was on warfarin. You know, I Coumadin. Warfarin is generic Coumadin. That you can't use an NSAID. You know, you can't use aspirin. You can't use Aleve. You can't use ibuprofen. So for 5-6 years, here I have all this bone and muscle pain, and I can't use what somebody would normally use. Well, now I can. So Aleve seems to work pretty well for me, and so I can stay off the Revlimid or the Pomalyst, then I'll be able to use some of these other drugs for a while and ease up on the oxycodone.
Well, that'll be
good. Would you consider kyphoplasty for your back? Is that a possibility for you?
I would, sure. But I'm hoping that I don't. My lumbar are all concave, have all collapsed some, but it seems to have stabilized. Whereas I had my T12 up a little higher. There is no T12 anymore. It's just gone. It sort of dissolved away.
Oh my God.
But I know I've got a friend who's 7 inches shorter.
Wow.
Yeah, I have heard that.
All his vertebrae just collapsed like a stack of, the stack of something just collapsing. And
no, you lost some weight
like
too, didn't you?
And now he's 5'6" or something.
Wow. Have you lost inches, Pat?
I've lost maybe an inch and a half, 2 inches.
Mm-hmm. Well,
you know,
your
vertebrae
butt
is almost an inch, so I lost that one.
That looked really good on the internet. That was classic. I mean, seriously, classic.
Are you talking about Patty's money shot?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That was something that was just like I had not ever seen displayed quite that way. Discussing a poor old guy with a hip replacement, poor Pat, and then she catches you practically buff. You know, you
gotta
do some
gallons.
Payback. You gotta do payback.
Yeah, well, I'll figure out something.
All right, what are y'all thinking?
I think somebody else needed to talk for 10 minutes.
Where are they? Come on.
Yeah, I think we've got
nice,
promoted a little
nice
better beforehand.
For Gary to call in and Sue's friend to call in, so that was great.
We had a couple.
We'll build this thing up. Ladies, don't you think once you'd like to keep trying?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, that is truly all I know to talk about these days, so bring it on. I feel like it, and Pat, you've got to feel that way. Sometimes it's consuming. You want to know what other thoughts can you have. And so I have to make myself, like, read a book that has nothing to do with illness or anything. I enjoy talking about it. It is my passion. However, sometimes I wonder if, you know, what would I be doing if I wasn't doing all this for multiple myeloma?
What a great question. And I've noticed, as you all probably have, that other people aren't as interested in talking about it as we are.
Oh, of course.
That happens to me a lot.
Well, that's the good thing about support groups, I think, is everybody there is interested in talking about it. So it's a great place where you can talk about it as much as you want to. You know, we're all there for the same reason, and people want to compare notes. And I think support groups are a great thing if you can get to one.
Well, I have a question for the two of you. I mean, I'd like to recruit more members. I open the obituary pages, and every now and then, you know, I see a young person like myself, 64, and they just passed away from multiple myeloma, and they're in my town, and I want to know why I didn't know them.
What do you do now to get the word out?
We have flyers in every doctor's office and at the cancer center. I have done some, you know, I was in the paper, like an article, and I really don't have anything else. I mean, I can't send a mass email because I don't know who they are.
Right.
I send a mass email to my members and say to them, hey, well, you know, while you're sitting in the waiting room, see what everybody's there for.
And we have encouraged, we've given our flyers out to everybody in the group periodically and say, hey, take a couple, and when you go for your infusion or when you see your doctor, bring it with you and, you know, talk about it to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last time we just passed out, we had a lot of business cards made up, and it has the meeting information on there, you know, the date and time and place. And we asked them the same. Somebody had mentioned that they ran into a person, somebody from our group ran into somebody at a meeting that had myeloma, and they're like, I wish I would have had a business card to give them. And so we just have given them to everybody and encouraged them to, you know, give them to their doctors or nurses, or, you know, we try to, I don't know, every 2 or 3 months, you know, bring it up again and ask people, and we do get people that way. There's some,
mm-hmm.
some doctors are more proactive, I guess, that way than others, and we have gotten patients from a ways away from here, all because of one particular doctor that's been telling her patients about it. So
ow.
I do that. And one other thing, I don't know if you've done this, but if we have a special speaker, I use the IMF's website. You can send an announcement out to the newspapers in your area. You go through the media. It's on the advocacy part of the website, and you go to the media guide. You put in your zip code, and it'll call up all the newspapers in your area, and you can pick up to 5 at a time, and you just type in whatever kind of announcement you want, and it will go to, that same announcement will go to 5 different newspapers. And we've gotten people that way that just saw it in their newspaper.
Oh, no, so, I didn't know about that. Okay.
Yeah, that's a good tip.
That's a good one. And I like to, I have business cards that say, you know, Multiple Myeloma Group of Charlotte, et cetera, and has mine and my husband's phone numbers and emails, but I had not thought about putting appointment days or meeting days, because I really want people to call me. But, you know, if you don't get good luck with that, then you try something different. So
yeah.
I may even write on the back, call me for meeting times or something like that.
Yeah, I find just doing some different things. You know, we do this a couple months ago, and we'll try this month. And we have like 3 major cancer centers right here in Grand Rapids, and then there's several in outlying areas. And what I've tried to do is get the contact information for, at our cancer centers, the social worker normally meets with each newly diagnosed patient. So I have them on my email list, so whenever I send out meeting notices, it goes to those coordinators at all of the cancer centers. So hopefully it kind of keeps it in, you know, the front of their minds. If they meet a new myeloma patient, then they've got our flyer, and hopefully they'll tell them about us. But I do, every month, I do send the meeting notice out to them. So I don't know how many of those things work, but we try hard to get it out there,
right,
you know, so as many people know about. You really want to get those newly diagnosed patients. That's,
oh, of
that's
course.
Where I
and
feel like it's so hard.
That is what's hard. And I met one just the other day. I went to a leukemia meeting, and, you know, she said, she was scared to death. You could hear it in her voice. And she's got tons of health problems, but newly diagnosed with multiple. And I just said, can I speak to you after the meeting, you know? And I said, look, you got to understand, a support group is a place to come and feel safe, but you don't have to talk.
Mm-hmm.
You just feel it in the room, and, you know, you can just sit there and absorb. And she thought you had to talk, and, you know, I said, no. It's just, I don't know. My other thing is that my cancer center here that's brand new and getting all these great doctors, we're getting one from Usmani from Arkansas. We've gotten Dr. Copeland from Cleveland Clinic. And now that hospital is starting their own support groups. They're doing them during the week. I told them they couldn't have my Saturday. But they have a huge database.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm not in that. I'm probably in that database, but I don't have access to that database.
Right.
And so I'm afraid so many people are just going to say, oh, well, we'll go to the cancer hospital instead of a Saturday. Because very few multiple myeloma patients work. So I don't know. I'm up against some pretty big challenges.
Yeah. Now, so does the hospital have specific myeloma support?
Well, right now they're just starting with blood cancers.
Yeah.
But they are hoping to get it broken down. Because I go to a leukemia lymphoma one, and it's, she's right. I mean, it's just very little information I'm interested in. Mm-hmm. And there's so many leukemias out there, and one leukemia is not interested in another's medicines.
Right.
So, yeah, just a few challenges. They can yep. You know, I guess a challenge is just something you got to work on.
That's right.
And a lot of people, it just isn't for them, and for whatever reason, they're, I mean,
right.
5% of, I've seen the statistics, 5% of cancer patients actually attend a support group. So
is that right? Wow.
That's few, and it's so wonderful. We all know how great they are, but,
yeah.
You know, and it's interesting. I'll put in my email, I don't know if you ever noticed, my phone number's on there. And you know a lot of people. I literally get a dozen emails from all over the world every day with questions, and dozens, actually, as in plural. And, you know, no one ever calls me.
I don't want to talk to the
same
people.
I think that's odd, don't you? And now be careful what you wish for, because that can get...
Yeah. I think email is less threatening to people. I don't know.
Yeah.
Definitely. I rarely get phone calls either. I know on the IMS website, if you go to support, support groups are listed there, and you can go by state, and eventually you can get down to where it'll have, you know, each city, and it has our email address and phone number. And I've had maybe 3 calls in the almost 2 years we've been doing this group. So it's not, yeah, phone number is not used nearly as often. It seems like I get more emails than I do phone calls.
Pat, if you don't
mind,
I have a question I'd like to ask Sue. Sue, how do you all split up duties or whatever for your support group when you've got 4 co-leaders?
You know, it's ended up the other 2 co-leaders have not been very involved. They both are in their early to mid-40s. He was diagnosed quite young.
Wow.
And they both have, you know, they have kids at home yet. They both work full-time. So they have had, they really helped us get it started. But since we've been going, they don't do so much with the actual running of the group. It kind of ended up once we got it off the ground. Harold and I are both retired, and we have more time. And so we've really ended up doing most of the, you know, the day-to-day stuff with the group. If we ask them for help, they're more than happy to do it with big events or things of that nature, but they are so busy that, it's not ended up really divided. They helped us get it started. I mean, they were really the ones that spurred, you know, had the idea and found the place to meet. But, as far as the day-to-day, that's one thing I think that we could use some help with. We're kind of getting to a point of,
mm-hmm.
You know, we end up planning. We try and do a July summer picnic and a Christmas party, and it is hard to be. We need more committees to help us with some of that. We can't
you
be doing
it all.
You have
any committees? Who helps you get your speakers? You do all that too?
Yeah. Yep.
We do too.
We've been doing all that. Yeah.
And
we could use help.
Yeah. That's something we got to learn. I don't know. I mean, I have to just. We got to learn how to delegate.
Yeah. It's hard. I mean, like, you know, everybody's a different age that has this disease. And, like, Pat, you have a whole different set of circumstances with your wife working and, you know, your schedule. And we have a lot of retired people that don't stay in Michigan for the whole year. So it's hard to, you know, we have a lot of people that aren't there all the time. And I think, Pat, you probably have the opposite with people leaving in the summer.
Sure. Yeah, we get some of your people probably. I don't think we have anyone from Grand Rapids, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, if not that, then I get them, and they're called halfbacks.
Yeah.
Oh, is that what they're called?
Halfbacks. They've
funny.
Only made it halfway back.
I see. That's not all bad.
Yeah.
Yep. I think, Shu and Sandy, I think you're really wonderful. Actually, we managed to cover 60 minutes, and I think it was great for me because I have a support group meeting is a new concept for me because in India we have very few of this. I think they're almost non-existent. And cancer patients here, yes, they have absolutely no venue other than the doctors and the nurses around who can give them some info. And hardly patients, network or talk to each other. The concept here is very different. They talk very less about their diseases, I should say. But I would really... I think something like this, if they would listen, they would understand how nice and how much more information you can get from such a group. Thank you so very much. For me also, because I've never been to one, and of course now I know why and how much it can help. I think, Pat, as you said, we should continue this. We should have one every month. We can
yes,
maybe take in questions.
I just emailed you asking if you'd be willing to try again.
Yeah, I would too.
Yes, we should. We should.
Okay.
Yes,
good.
We could we could conduct one every month and promote it more, as Pat says, and get questions. And I'm sure people would start, warming up to this idea and speak live on air about their about myeloma. Thank
hey,
you so
Sandy,
very much, Pat. Thank
maybe
you.
Next,
yeah.
Maybe next month you could come up. You could post something on the listserv. An announcement.
Okay,
on the listserv.
I will do that.
That
I will actually. Yes, I'll be glad to. You think anybody would mind?
No, not at all. And I think it would be good if it was you, not me. Actually, I think that would be good.
Oh, okay. Right, and then I can get my letter from Mike Katz saying this is not relevant,
yes,
but I'm going to do it anyway.
No, he's not. He'll be fine. Yeah, Priya, we'll get those phones lit up for you next month. And you know what? Wouldn't it be great someday in a perfect world we could have it international? Wouldn't it be great, or you could do these in India or in different countries? Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yes, definitely. Yes, it would be really
great. Maybe with the help of the IMF would help. They're everywhere.
They are. Great idea.
Anyway, all right. I've enjoyed talking with all of you tonight.
You too. Take care.
All right. Have a good
I'm
week.
I'm headed to my
Thank
support
so
group
much.
Meeting
yes.
right now. So.
All right.
Okay.
Take care, everybody. Bye.
You
Bye-bye.
Too. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye.